to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast.
This is episode number 80 of the Family Gamers Podcast.
We're really that old?
Yeah, we really are.
Okay.
As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely wife, Anitra.
That's me.
We are here to bring you lots of information about gaming as a family. This week, we're going to talk about something which is very, very subjective.
Yes, but also something we can at least put some loose guidelines around.
Yeah, so this week we're going to talk about fun.
I like fun.
Yeah.
What? Do you like fun?
Games that are fun. So there's a lot of games that are good and games that are enjoyable to play. And this isn't kind of like you finish a game and you reflect on it and you're like, I had a good time. You know, that was fun. But no, games that like in the moment, you're having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So if you are paying attention to our Facebook page, you can find that at facebook.com/familygamersaa. Earlier this evening, we are recording on Monday night, we posted a live video that we took of us playing Sticky Chameleon by ELO. That would be...
That would be a fun game.
That was fun. but before we get into our show topic, as usual, we are going to talk about what we have been doing.
Yeah. We've gotten a few games in the midst of busy life. I'll work backwards, starting with tonight.
Sure.
So we played Sticky Chameleons. We'll talk more about that later.
We did, yep.
We got in a few plays of Match Madness.
Yeah, so Match Madness is a kind of a cool game from Fox Mind Games.
Yeah.
And in this game, I mean, you've kind of done these sort of, they're almost like Tangram-style puzzles, I guess.
Yeah, it's a competitive puzzle game. You have these domino-like tiles, except that they each have four sides of
domino combinations. Yeah, so basically, if you took two cubes and stuck them together, you would have one of these units, and each person gets five of them. And so on the short ends, they have numbers. So just
to make sure that everybody gets the right combination of stuff.
And on the four long sides, they have different combinations of like colors and symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what you have, these different cards from skill level 1 to skill level 5, and you are trying to race, you know, in broad strokes, you're trying to race to match the patterns that are on the cards. But some of those blocks have the same patterns on some sides and different patterns on other sides. So you may be trying to put something together and realize that the last block you want
is not gonna work.
Right, because you know certain things where a single block with two things on it could be made up of two different blocks with those same individual sides, and so it gets to be surprisingly tricky, and it can get a little frustrating, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, we have mentioned this game before. Mm-hmm. It's a puzzle game, and as a puzzle game it's kind of interesting, but what makes it more special is that there are difficulty levels built in. There are five different difficulty levels on the cards.
Right.
And so one of the things we were doing tonight was testing out several different ways of dancing around the difficulty levels, playing with adults and children together.
Yeah, the first time we talked about it on the show, we had kind of done this modified version where I had to complete the more difficult puzzles while our oldest was trying to complete some of the easier ones. Yep.
And you were racing to complete the same number.
Exactly. So that was kind of a neat way to do that balancing. I mean, it really, you know, the more we play this game, the more kind of options there are on different ways that we could, you know, tweak the rules or just play a completely different game that sort of uses the same base system.
Mm-hmm.
There's really kind of a lot of different things that you can do with these. It's really pretty neat.
There's even foreign ideas of,
you know, somebody puts something together with their blocks. And then the other person has to complete it. And then, you know, if you time that, then the other person puts something together and the first person has to beat the time.
Sure.
Kind of. I mean, there's all sorts of different sorts of things that you can put together. And I do think, because it was starting to happen to me at the end, that if you start to remember, at the very least, which patterns are duplicated.
Yes.
It will help you a lot.
It makes it a lot easier.
Trying to get things completed. So there is certainly, you know, with a lot of these kinds of memory-like
puzzle
games.
There's a memory component in there. Yeah.
It does get a little bit easier over time. So the person with the most experience is going to have a slight advantage.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of unavoidable. So a lot of fun, a lot louder than I expected it to be. You know, you really do need to play it on a soft surface because those are some clicky blocks.
Oh, very clicky. But it was good,
though. But it was fun.
you a couple nights ago played Shutterbug with our kids?
I did. So at PAX Unplugged, we had heard about Dicey Peaks, and we really wanted to check out the Calliope Games booth to play some Dicey Peaks.
Yeah.
And so we did. But while we were there, we got a little bit of exposure to a couple of other games that we've talked about before, one of which was Shutterbug. Shutterbug is a interesting game where you're playing as a photographer in the early 30s, and you're trying to chase around...
you know, mythical creatures, right?
Fantastic beasts kind of things. You think of like the...
you're thinking of like the...
Yetis.
The kind of stuff you're taking pictures for, like The Inquirer.
Yeah, the Abominable Snowman, yeah. The Bigfoot, those kinds
Jack
of things.
Jackalope.
That, all that stuff. And so it's sort of this card management sort of game where you have to move around the world and pick up cards. Then you can play... It's really hard to explain quickly. Play the cards... to pick up certain tiles that have matching traits to the cards you're playing in order to, quote, take those pictures.
Okay.
It was okay. I think I need to play it more.
Sure.
There's sort of quality 3 pictures, quality 2 pictures, and quality 1 pictures. And you have to play 3 cards to get a quality 3 picture, but it's worth more points.
Mm-hmm.
And the approach that I had taken with it, and it might have been a function of the tiles you're pulling out of the bag to put on the board, because you can tell which, quote, difficulty those tiles are.
Yep, yep.
We were pulling a lot of the higher difficulty tiles.
Mm.
And so it was very much like, go pick up some cards. Go take a picture. Go pick up some cards. Go take a picture. But you can only do one thing per turn, and there's only 8 turns in the game.
Oh, boy.
So
yeah,
it's a little... It's a little, you know, because you can't go, I'll go to this place and take a picture and go to that place and take a picture and go to that place and take a picture. Oh, and I need some cards. If all you're doing is pulling 2s and 3s out of the bag.
Yeah. All right.
And so it was very paralyzing. Not like an analysis paralysis kind of thing, but it was very paralyzing. There just wasn't a lot you could do.
Sure.
And
well, we'll play it more.
Yeah, we're going to have to play it more. I mean, I don't want to say the game felt shallow, but it just didn't feel deep. Like, I that's...
Kind of incomplete?
It just felt like, for the process of playing this game, I should have been able to do more things.
Okay. Let's see. Some other stuff we played. We played a game called Contact.
This was neat.
This was a fun game. Mm-hmm. It is kind of hard to describe, so I'm putting a link to a full summary of the rules in the show notes.
Do you want to give it a shot?
We can try. You need at least 3 people to play this game. It is a verbal game.
You can play it anywhere. You can play it in a car. Actually, that would be a great game.
It would be a great car game. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. But, I mean, you're not writing anything down. There's no board. Nothing. It's just a bunch of people sitting around talking in a codified way.
Right.
One person picks a word that will stay secret that everyone else is trying to guess. They give the rest of the crowd the first letter of the word. So, say my word is dandelion. And so I tell everybody D. And then everybody else tries to come up with clues to some kind of word that would start with the letter D.
So, for example, I could do something like... So, there's this animal that is all black and talks and is generally bad-tempered and is on TV.
And if someone else in the group
So I can kind of vaguely give hints for a little bit. And if nobody knows what I'm talking about, then I'll just be like, never mind. And if somebody does, if Anitra is a third person and has...
If the third person
realizes that I'm talking about Daffy Duck,
then he says contact.
And that person and I have to count down from 10 to 1, giving the original clue giver, who is Anitra,
me,
the opportunity to say, no, it's not Daffy Duck.
No, it's not Daffy. Right.
But if she doesn't say that, and at the end of the countdown, we both say the same word out loud... Then Anitra has to give us the next letter in her word.
Now I'm forced to reveal the next letter.
Right.
But then all future clues have to fit the all the letters that have been revealed so far.
Right.
So it makes for a really interesting back and forth because you keep trying to give clues that the other that at least one of the other guessers will be able to figure out,
but not necessarily the original clue giver,
but not the word holder.
You know, I mean, this guy you call him when there's trouble.
It's not Darkwing Duck.
Oh, come on! But that's contact, and you know it was fun. We didn't keep track of the score. We were just kind of talking, and
yeah,
it's a great time when you're trying to, I don't know, get to know people or just sitting around and having a drink and just talking or whatever.
Yeah. And it's a really good way to start reaching into all the obscure areas of knowledge you have. Man, we had medical clues. We had.
By the way, my clue was great, and I cannot believe she didn't get it.
I'm sorry.
Killed me.
We had classical music clues. We had video game clues, all depending on, you know, who you were trying to sync up with. So it's really good. It's kind of tough. It was kind of tough for me to get into it at first, not just because, you know, the rules seemed a little weird, but it's one of those games where my mind suddenly goes blank.
Mm-hmm.
And I needed to go through a couple rounds, and then all of a sudden my brain started working in the right direction game work.
We've got Winter Active coming up this weekend, and last year mm-hmm. we played Celebrity. So we might be able to find those same people and introduce them to Contact.
I'm hoping we can.
That would be fun.
Some more stuff. We played a variation of Intrigue. So a friend of ours basically told us that he likes Intrigue. But he couldn't find a copy for a decent price anywhere, and he didn't particularly like the theme. So he made his own new themed version of Intrigue.
You're basically the bouncers of a casino.
Yeah. The original Intrigue is medieval monks and religious leaders and political leaders, and you're all trying to bribe each other. It's very simple on the face of it, but it turns into all kinds of complex negotiation and bribes and area control, because the longer...
It's not really area
it
control.
It is, though, because...
It's more
because
social deduction.
Because the way you earn... One of the ways you earn more money to bribe other people with is by being able to stay in the same high-value spot and get the money that way.
My only problem with games like this is that it seems like every time I play, there's one person who decides they want to be an agent of chaos. And it just, there's nothing you can do with that. And I understand that it's because I'm a curmudgeon.
It is because you're a curmudgeon. I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun playing this, and not just because everybody thought I was winning until close to the end. I was not actually winning.
I put some pretty intense bribes in there, and it didn't matter because they just wanted to just be funny.
Then you start avoiding that person.
I did for the entire game.
but it's definitely the kind of game that I would find worth checking out again. But I think it would get really frustrating to try to play with children.
No
go.
Not even. One that is good for children, though, is this next one. Very good for creative thinking.
Oh, Concept. So we've had it for a while. We finally got a chance to pull it out.
Mm-hmm. So this is a word guessing game, I suppose.
Yes.
You'd call it. But instead of categories where you're drawing Pictionary where you're drawing pictures, or instead of something like Taboo where you're given clues but you can't say certain words.
Yep.
Concept is a game where you have a board with a whole bunch of icons on it, and you have
all the icons are kind of multi-purpose.
Yeah, you have one like primary thought token, mm-hmm. and then a bunch of little cubes of that same color that you can kind of scatter on the board in various
yep.
things that relate to the primary thought, and a bunch of sub thought tokens, and then cubes that relate to those. And so we actually shared an image from our playthrough of Concept on Instagram to see if people could guess what we were referring to, and somebody did.
Amazingly, the very first guess got it.
So it was the primary concept was like drama or theater, and then the secondary concepts were fighting and love and death.
Yeah, it was drama or theater, then it was love, and war or death, and a man and a woman.
Right.
Yeah, and someone guessed like Romeo and Juliet, and we're like, "Wow, you got it right away!
Nailed it!" So
we had some fun ones. We did get one that was super frustrating, and I feel bad for our daughter who was playing with us because she gave awesome clues, and we just could not get it.
Yeah. So she you know, it was a imaginary animal, and she put for animal she put cubes down on orange and black. And white, and we're like tiger, like Tigger, and they're like, you know, that you can all you can do is say yes or no, but you can say things like yes.
you can be kind of leading in your tone, but all you're really allowed to say is yes if people are on the right track.
Right.
And we circled around imaginary tigers for a long time, and then we as a group just kind of collectively decided, well, that's obviously not it, and she got so mad at us. Because it was Calvin and Hobbes.
The clue was very clever.
Yes, it was so good. She's
creepy clever. But yeah, that game's a lot of fun.
And unlike a lot of other word guessing games, Concept is specifically designed so that the teams basically rotate around, which is a very cool concept.
Right. Yeah, if you have an even number of players... then as the teams rotate around, you'll end up with the same teams every time you come around the table.
Yeah.
But if you have an odd number, then your teams will actually switch off every time, which is kind of neat.
But if you have anything more than four players, even or odd, the points will get distributed around differently because you have more people guessing than clue giving.
Right. So
you're always a team of two giving the clues.
When any player guesses the clue, they get a basically two victory point token.
Yep.
And each of the clue givers gets one victory
point. It's a single victory point.
And there are 12 two victory point tokens, and when they are gone, the game is over.
So the idea is you play 12 rounds. We did not play 12 rounds because the night was getting long.
Yep. But it was a lot of fun,
and I cannot wait to play that one again.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that we will play over and over and over and over again is Ancestry.
Yeah, we talked about this in the last show.
This is our favorite game from Calliope, hands down.
Oh, yeah. We're loving this game a lot. Art's a little weird, but...
yeah.
But the game's a blast. The
game is so much fun.
Look out for our review on that one coming sometime in the relatively near future.
Soonish. Probably February. We played some Loot.
Mm-hmm. From Game Right Games. We posted a review on that last week.
Yep. And Loot was fun. It wasn't really anything special, but it was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a nice game.
It was
from
yeah.
Dr. Reiner Kinesia, one of his older games, actually.
Yeah. I liked the art. I did look around, and the older version of this, the art is not so good. And I don't just mean it's cartoony and silly. It's also a lot harder to distinguish some of the different colors and stuff. In the newest version by Game Right, which came out 2017, the art is fantastic, and it's very easy to tell what is what.
Right.
Played some Go Away Monster. Mm-hmm. It keeps popping up.
It's the go-to game for a three-year-old.
It's one of the go-to games. Yeah. And we also tried out, not the three-year-old, but our oldest and I tried out a few different versions of this game called Top Trumps.
Yeah, so we had a chance to work with some of the folks over at I don't remember the name of the company, but the company that publishes the Top Trump stuff when they were demoing a new product, a new Harry Potter product at the local Barnes & Noble that we do our work with. And most of their stuff is this Top Trumps stuff. So these games are kind of neat. They're basically like war with a bunch of categories on each card. Would you say that's true?
Yeah. So the person who is putting down first picks what category you're all going to compete on.
Mm-hmm. And they're looking at their card and they pick the category.
You look at your card and you pick the category. It's neat because with the multiple categories, winning is not always a sure thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's neat because you can play with more than two players.
Mm-hmm.
And the cards are neat. They come in so many different themes. We started off playing Shopkins. Shopkins was fine.
Our
9-year-old loves it.
I can't imagine how, you know, fun that is. I mean, they're just do they actually have legitimate attributes? Like, what are the attributes that they're competing on?
I don't remember.
Obviously, that one had staying power.
Well, it was like cuteness and shopability, or I don't know. It was something dumb.
Okay,
like that.
Okay.
But I forgot to mention the third player in this was my mother. So after playing a little bit with Shopkins,
so three generations.
Yeah, and I was like, well, you know what? Let's pull out one with a different theme. And the 9-year-old wanted to go Star Wars, but I said, no. We're playing this with Nine-Nine. Mischievous Cats. That sounds fantastic. Let's play that.
Yeah, I think the thing that, for me, is so interesting about this Top Trump stuff is the range of intellectual property that they have. I mean, it really covers everything. You know, when we were doing this thing over at the store, we played some Top Trump's Harry Potter stuff. And so the stats were things like magic and wisdom and cunning and, you know, things like that. And so, you know, when you pulled Severus Snape, for example, your cunning and your magic were really, really high, but your wisdom was not terribly high. Things like that. But what's really interesting is that, yes, they have stuff like Shopkins and they have some, you know, heavy metal, whatever. But they also have stuff that really could be kind of educational. So you mentioned Mischievous Cats.
They have stuff that have some stuff that's explicitly educational, like Countries of the World, Bugs. Well, that could be educational or not, I suppose. United States. I mean, especially when it comes to like geography and stuff like that, mm-hmm. they've got some
Yeah, they do have some really neat stuff. And I mean, they're inexpensive. It's just a deck of cards.
Yeah.
You know, they're under $10. I think they're like $8, or they're supposed to be in that range.
The brand new ones are $10, but the older ones are less.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're basically, you know, these are the impulse buy things you see on the end cap at Walmart at the register, kind of.
Yeah.
If you were to think about, you know, where you would see stuff like this.
And we're here to tell you that they're a decent impulse buy.
Yeah, they're not bad. They're not bad at all.
Yeah.
So, that's the Top Trumps.
As always, there's also video games in our lives.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. Sometimes on a Sunday afternoon, it's just like, you know what? You can sit down with the Switch. You can sit down with the Wii U. You can hang out with the iPad. I'm going to play some PlayStation 4. We're all in the living room.
We're all there.
It's kind of like family time, but it's kind of not family time.
It's sort of like we're together, but all of us are just checked out doing our own thing.
Because we're all beat. You know, on occasion, that's not bad. Yeah, I would say it happens maybe like that, probably once every other week, maybe.
Maybe.
For an hour or two. Yeah, so.
So you're still playing through the extra content on Horizon Zero Dawn?
I'm done.
You're done with
I'm
the extra
done.
Content
totally
now?
Done.
As of yesterday?
Yep, totally finished with Horizon Zero Dawn. If you play that game in the DLC, the Fire Claws are the most nasty things ever.
Yeah.
They're so nasty. But I'm done.
And although, I think we've mentioned this before too, that although you did play portions of this game in front of our children, this is definitely not a game for children. They're...
There's a little bit of language.
There's some language.
That's really it. And
There are a few scenarios where you end up mass murdering robbers and stuff.
They're bandits. They're bad. There's a little bit of language.
Teenagers for this gameplay.
Yeah, this is PG-13. That I would say. Or
rated T for
rated
teen.
Rated T for teen or something. Yeah, I don't know. It's not super bad. You know,
no.
I think incidental contact is fine. I always have captions on so I can skip past stuff because I read faster than they talk.
Yeah.
I did have a few forced coughs.
Yeah. and there are a few times that you're like, I need to go fight these bandits. I'm going to save and quit and do that later.
Yep.
So that was fine. Claire, our 9-year-old, is really, really close to finishing Legend of Zelda Wind Waker.
So I got to give her credit because when she first started playing that game, she couldn't do it.
No,
I
mean, she couldn't.
She couldn't. And she really wants. She wants to play Breath of the Wild so badly.
Well, part of this is she has discovered the magic of YouTube walkthroughs.
Yeah.
But you know what? And she mentioned this to me the other day. She's like, "But I'm still playing the game." And I'm like, "You are playing the game. You are the one beating the bosses."
Yep.
I mean, if you need help knowing how to do that, I think that's okay.
Look, our show today is about having fun.
Yeah.
Okay. And I know there's a lot of different opinions about how to play video games. When I was younger, I was definitely like...
Hardcore, don't even look at the manual kind of thing.
I'm going to figure this out for myself. I'm 36 years old. I don't have time for that garbage anymore. I'll give it, you know, hey, I'll give it the old college try. And like, I don't have the patience to fumble my way through puzzles that are, you know, obnoxious for the sake of being obnoxious and obfuscated.
Yeah.
I don't have patience for that anymore. And so if Claire's desire is to play through the game and the puzzles, I mean, you know, sometimes with some of that stuff, you know, you're really just like mentally not there, and that's okay.
I have played multiple Legend of Zelda games. There's only one that I think I played all the way to the end, and even then it was because I found a few, you know, tips on some of the puzzles.
I just don't think it's a big deal.
So, you know what?
Whatever.
If it helps you get through the game, go for it.
Yeah.
We don't need to be purists. Mm. I picked up and started playing Mario plus Rabbids.
That's a good game. You're going to be on an airplane for 8 hours.
Oh, that'll be fun. I don't think the battery will last that long.
Probably not. But we're going away this weekend without the kids. I'm almost thinking of taking the Switch just so the kids don't have it.
I'm horrible, like, horrible. Congratulations, Claire. You get to play Breath of the Wild when we come back.
Yeah.
And I also was introduced to a online text-based game called Seed Ship, which thankfully plays out in fairly short scenarios, but is also kind of addictive.
I've never I know nothing about this game, so.
I heard about it on Twitter. It's a very well done text-based game. The idea is that you are controlling a, not a generation ship, a cold sleep ship. You are the only hope for the future of humanity because humanity is killing itself out.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. But that means that the weight of finding a suitable planet rests on your shoulders alone. And various things happen.
Everybody's dead, Dave. Yeah.
Well, and various things happen along the way because you're still traveling at less than light speed. So we're talking, you know, thousands of years. And you as the AI are kind of, you know, more or less woken up anytime there's a problem to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's a, hey, we found a planet. Is this planet suitable? It's got really high gravity and it's super hot and there's some kind of vegetation down there. We have no idea if it's poisonous or not. And there's limited water. I'm like, no, that's a bad choice.
Yeah.
But other things will happen along the way. Asteroids, you know.
Pirates!
No, because no one's alive except your
alien crew. Pirates!
It's mostly non-sentient environmental stuff. So, okay. You know, asteroids, comets, you know, it's going to hit the ship. Are you going to let it hit in this area or are you going to try to turn the ship and let the chips fall where they may? So it's pretty neat. You're balancing all these different factors. Mm-hmm. And when you do settle down, it gives you a little description of what, you know, what happens to the colonists and what kind of government they end up forming and what kind of culture and stuff. And then it gives you a score.
And they're all dead.
So I've probably played through it like 10 times now because each time only takes about 15 minutes.
150 minutes.
Probably. Some, that's cool. Some have been shorter than that.
It's all good.
Everybody's dead, Dave.
So that's about it. That's all we've been doing.
A little bit.
We do have a rousing stay up all night game session in our future in the next week.
At least one.
So
yeah,
it's going to be some interesting stuff, some more exposure. Oh yeah, well, we've had plenty to talk about. But one thing we definitely will be doing is having a lot of fun.
Yes, games are fun.
And so we checked with our community, and we had a couple of people tell us what kinds of games they play for fun. And we'll tell you about those first when we come back from our break. This episode of The Family Gamers is sponsored by the Wild East Game Company. You can go to wildeastgames.com/order to find all of the games
that the Wild East Game Company has created. Whether you're looking for privateering rodents, some upset totems, or some electrified dice, the Wild East Game Company has the game for you. Check them out online at wildeastgames.com.
And we're back.
So, fun games.
Andrew, did you say we're going to start with some back talk?
Yeah, sure. Back talk is something we won't take from our kids.
But we love it from you.
So we asked on social media.
We asked on our Facebook community.
What kinds of games people thought were fun and what kinds of games are fun for their families. And Krista Cox says that that some of the games that are fun for her family are any kind of Flux. That mm-hmm. is definitely something where, you know, those games where you get so close to winning and then someone changes everything. Looney Quest, which I haven't played.
I know it's by Looney Labs, but that's all I know.
And Super Fight, which technically we haven't played. But we played a game that came out before Super Fight by completely different developers, which is almost exactly the same game called Cluster Fight.
Yeah.
And that game is awesome.
Yes.
And that game is a ton of fun. And for those of you who I mean, we can tell you the rules from Cluster Fight. Right.
Yeah.
Cluster
We've mentioned this before.
Is a game where it's kind of the who would win in a fight,
mm-hmm.
right? And so there's a very apples to apples like dynamic where everybody except for the judge puts down a character who would win in a fight.
Yep.
And then everybody votes
secretly
who they think would win in a fight. And so they put their vote down, and then in reverse order, everybody plays an effect card that affects the modifier to the fight. Right.
It could be a place. It could be an actual modifier to the fight itself. Like the fight is now a spelling bee. Or it can be a modifier on one or all of the combatants.
Mm-hmm. So those go all the way back through, and hilarity ensues because of all these ridiculous things are happening mm-hmm. to the combatants, and then finally the judge decides who wins.
Yep. The biggest difference between Cluster Fight and Super Fight is that Super Fight does not have the voting.
Okay.
So it's more of the apples to apples feel.
Cool. So yeah, those games are certainly a lot of fun. I mean, I really like the who would win in a fight dynamic better than the apples to apples dynamic. Apples to apples is very tired to me at this point.
Yeah. Already said if we were going to play apples to apples, we would play Bring Your Own Book instead.
Yeah. So. I mean, truthfully, that genre, I think, has probably pretty much run its course in my head.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Yeah.
So.
All right. And we also got a comment from Louis. I don't know.
Louise.
Alba. The one game my kids ask the most to play is Survive, Escape from Atlantis. I've heard of this game, but that's about all I can say.
I've seen this game. I know what the box art looks like. I cannot comment on this game.
So his kids are a bit older than ours, but not a huge amount. So that might be a game we should look into some more.
Definitely. And if you would, comment on either the show post on Facebook or whatever, your favorite parts about Survive Escape from Atlantis, because that would definitely be something that would be helpful for us since we have not played the game.
Yeah. So before we actually talk about some of the games that we think are just plain fun, I think we should talk about, like, categories or what helps make a game fun.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, this is stuff that is super, super subjective.
Yeah.
And we really would be interested in your feedback and whether you agree with us or not.
Yes.
But what we tried to do is we tried to look at things that are similar in games that that lots of different kinds of people think are fun.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's no hard and fast rules. Otherwise, game designers would just follow those rules, and there would be just a handful of really fun games and nothing else.
Or lots and lots of games that are exactly the same, which would be boring.
Right. That would not be fun. So I would say, as far as fun games where everybody feels involved and nobody's like, all right, are we done yet? Is the game over? Three or four major things. One is that either it's fast moving or everyone is involved on every turn.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is that there's some kind of player interaction. Either explicitly in-game player interaction, or it's a light enough game that you can keep up a side conversation without losing track of what you're doing on the board.
Or, I mean, there are games where a perfect example would be that modifier of intrigue that we played, where there can be side banter, which isn't integral to the mechanics that are currently at play, but they still affect the path of the game in the game world.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a lot of fun. I mean, I think, you know, when we look at these things, so a fast moving game, Stinky Chameleon would be a perfect example of that.
Yeah, super
fast moving.
And everyone is involved on every turn.
Yeah, like a game like Tenzi is a game that's fast moving. Even games where the turns are short, so it's not necessarily frenetic, but just, you know, a game like a Zombie Dice or something like that, where there's not, there's no possibility of analysis paralysis.
Yeah, a lot of your classic dexterity games, like, yes, you're not doing anything when it's not your turn, but it's going to be your turn again in a minute or two.
Right. I mean, I almost think back at something like Mars Tabletop Open, where, you know, you get a lot of that spectator sport feel.
Sure, sure.
When people are playing that game. And then everyone being involved on every turn, this is something I think of, like Perlock Holmes, which we talked about last year, is a game where everybody is involved.
Everybody's giving
on
input.
Everybody's turn, no matter what. Yeah. They're just doing different things. And that's a really cool, good way. You know, Hanabi is sort of.
Like I was thinking Hanabi.
The original. I was also kind of thinking
some really well done role selection games like Puerto Rico, where yes, it is, you know, so and so's turn and they pick the role, and then everybody gets to do the action.
Everybody does the action in kind of a lesser way.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we already talked about player interaction. Seems relatively straightforward. A game that's not too hard, and so this is super subjective. It totally depends on your group. I mean, Perlock Holmes is too hard for a three-year-old, so it would not be fun for him. But Go Away Monster is fun for him.
Right.
That's not too hard. All right.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, when we talk about fun games, and this actually didn't end up on our list, but I'll throw it in here because it's sort of in the context of things that are not too hard. There's certain mechanics that are easier for people to understand, like potentially non-gamer people.
Yes. So
the more casual gamer.
Yes.
Truly excellent game designers find ways to translate game mechanics into really easily understood concepts that people can sort of pick up without having to go in depth on how a certain mechanic works.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean when I say that? I mean, the example that keeps popping into my head, which isn't even a board game, would be something like the Nintendo Wii, where the controls were so easy
intuitive.
To understand
yeah.
and intuitive that it made it fun for a lot of people that aren't gamers.
Yeah.
And anything that has that kind of an aspect to it is really kind of ingenious. And the first example that I would come up with on something like that is Bring Your Own Book. And the reason why is because readers, people who have books and like to read, there's a comfort level with having a book.
Yeah.
Right? And so it kind of can help get over the hump of trying to implement a mechanic.
Yeah.
And finding different ways to do those kinds of things in games is really, really clever.
Yeah,
so it's not completely foreign. There's something familiar about it.
Yeah, as much as you and I do appreciate games that have very clever, unusual mechanics, sometimes simple is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think of Dicey Peaks as an example. The only thing you have to kind of wrap your head around is you're rolling dice and you're not always rolling the same number of dice. But you roll the dice, you go, oh, well, I'm trying to climb. Here are my climbers. This is how many spaces I can climb.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that, you know, when we talk about not too hard, that's how I think about it. It's not necessarily about the particular difficulty of a game or the complexity of the mechanics.
It's that there's not a lot of cognitive
dissonance to
work through. Yeah.
Yep.
Sure. And then obviously your group dynamics. If you have a big group, you're probably going to do a party game. Or if you have a really rowdy group, you're still probably going to want to do a party game. But, you know, if you have a small, close-knit group, loves heavy, you know, heavy, in-depth stuff, then maybe your fun go-to game of choice is a role-playing game or a strategy game. And, you know, there was a period of time when Lords of Waterdeep and Pandemic were the things that kept coming up on our on our table over and over again.
I miss Lords of Waterdeep. I don't. I mean, I guess I play it digitally, but I don't think I've taken that game on, put it on the table
in about a year.
In about a year.
But that depended on the group. For a certain group, that was fun, and we could just totally, and everybody knew how to play it. We could pull it out and bam, right away.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's also something to be said for theme, right? So there's a great discussion about whether theme really matters.
Mm.
I happen to think it does. But beyond that, the as the board game industry has really matured over the last 3 years, there's been a huge influx of games that have storylines and narratives to them. You know, yeah. You think of like a Mice and Mystics or an Above and Below or Tales of the Arabian Nights, or whatever the name of that game is officially. You know, these are games that have really strong storylines. Pandemic Legacy is another example.
Sure, sure.
And sometimes you can take, actually a legacy game would be a perfect example. You can take a game that has tried and true mechanics, and when you put a story on top of it, when you put a narrative on top of it, it makes it so much more intense. Betrayal of the House on Haunted Hill is probably another example of that.
Where
that game, honestly, even people who love that game will kind of acknowledge that the mechanics are a little broken, but the story
is
and
good.
And the theme stuff is what really makes that game intense.
Yeah.
And that is something, if you've got a lot of people that, you know, getting back to that reading thing, if you have a lot of people that love to read, that love to watch movies, that love to immerse themselves in narrative fiction, those games are fun. It doesn't matter what it, I mean, think of a game like Time Stories, which mechanically was really aggravating.
Odd and,
it was aggravating, but it was fascinating.
But we did
want to
see what happened.
Yeah. Like, we were just like, can we just play the game and just forget that the mechanics exist? I almost wanted to just read the rule book, but like, that felt like cheating.
Yeah.
You know? It really, really depends on a lot of those different things. And I think from a family game perspective, that drop-in, drop-out ability to... You don't have to spend forever explaining the rules of a game.
Yeah.
That's really, really important. And one thing that I would add to that, and this is something I've kind of come around to a lot more, is that as sort of the hardest core gamer in the family, it becomes incumbent on me to preview a game that I would think we would want to play as a family, because if I can translate those mechanics into something easily explainable to our kids, it removes a lot of that.
It smooths the whole process.
Yeah, it removes a lot of that barrier of entry. And you know, I will pick this as a kind of a classic example of this. I didn't do that with Mice and Mystics.
Yeah, we spent a lot of time sitting around trying to figure out what was going on.
When we first sat down to play Mice and Mystics, we were, you know, our poor kids, they were 5 and 7. You know, four and seven, sitting at the table, like trying, like, what are we doing here?
They spent a lot of time waiting around. They're like, can we do something?
And I wanted so badly to just move on, but I had to grok the mechanics.
Yeah.
And that was on me. I should have gone and I should have kind of soloed it a little bit and maybe ruined the first little bit of the story just to understand how the mechanics of that game worked.
Yeah.
Dropped the barrier of entry so that, you know, I could hand wave some stuff for the kids or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that when we look at what's fun,
waiting around is not fun.
Yeah, we always kind of come into stuff like this and I think are trying to offer a takeaway to our listeners, right? And there's with any game, there's always going to be a way that we can make it a little bit more fun within the construct of the game. And sometimes the mechanics are such that, you know, Kalis is not going to work for a 10-year-old. It's just not going to happen. But, you know, if there are games that get bogged down by mechanics, having a really good understanding of those mechanics will help anyone else who's playing that game have more fun with it.
I agree. One last thing before we mention any more specific games. We talked a little bit about preferences. Not just difficulty level and group dynamics, but also preferences. I know that I love abstract games, and I love dexterity games. And so games in those genres are always going to get an automatic bump on the fun for me. I mean, Sagrada, Dimension, Dr. Eureka, which combines some of that abstract puzzle and the dexterity. Oh man, I dig that game.
It's not bad.
But, you know, as the adult in our
relationship.
Gaming, well, I was gonna say as the adult in our family, and then I was trying to back it up and it just didn't work. As often the adult who is the driver behind playing games, I need to remember to back off, because even though I think Dr. Eureka is awesome, our middle child gets frustrated with it super quickly. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. Andrew, you really love resource management.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Lords of Waterdeep. And so games with resource management will pretty much automatically be a bump on your fun meter. Whereas I kind of like, some are good and some are not so good, and I, you know, whatever.
Sure.
So, knowing your own favorites, I guess, can help you to be more aware of, don't just push a game and be like, this game is so much fun, if it is not the kind of game that other people are really into.
Yeah, I mean, look,
our
kids,
be more aware.
In general, will play what we want them to play.
Often with some grumbling and complaining if we tell them it's for a review. But
yeah, well,
know.
No, but and that's not what I mean. Kind of in general, like our kid, the global hour,
the global.
Yeah, I think
kids
of parents in general. I mean, they'll try just about anything, right? And so
yeah, pretty much.
You know, if in the context of playing games as a family, you'll get a sense of what your kids are going to like and what your kids are not going to like.
Yes.
You know, I mean, this is yet one more opportunity for us to give a shout out to the My Little Pony Scythe guy, because
yeah,
he recognized a game with elegant mechanics and realized that it was understandable for his daughter, but the theme was not interesting to her.
Yeah. Was not approachable for her at all.
And so he created My Little Scythe. And
yeah,
it allowed her to play a My Little Pony game, and he could, you know, play a game with elegant mechanics, and the theme didn't bother him all that much.
Yeah. We can't all be that guy, but we can study our children and understand what drives them when they play games.
Absolutely. I mean, our kids are in some ways a combination of us, but in many ways, I mean, we've got three kids. One of them is a lot more like you. One of them is a lot more like me.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is a really strange combination of the two of us.
Yes. yep.
And it's surprising how foreign our kids can be to us sometimes. And I think that's super true with games, too. And
yeah,
you know, when we look at what fun is, it's not just what's fun to me or what's fun to mom, it's also what's fun to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. Unfortunately, there's one of our kids who basically only has fun when they're winning. And so there's not a whole lot we can do about that.
That's fine. I mean, he'll learn. You know, it's okay. I think that's...
I was trying to keep identity secret.
Well,
to protect the guilty.
I think that's the kind of thing that that you learn over time. You know?
Yeah, totally. But our other children, I can point to things that they like and things that they don't like. This one, it just, if he's winning, he's having fun. And if he's not winning, he is not having fun. And he does not like it. So we're hoping he'll grow out of that with more practice. Yeah, so those are our guidelines for what makes a fun game. You want to mention off a few more? I asked our daughter Claire for some of her input on what she thought made a really fun game. And so she suggested Dicey Peaks.
Mm-hmm.
She really enjoys that one.
Mm-hmm.
She did not suggest Blank, because she's definitely already seen that not everybody has fun with that game.
Well, good for her.
Which I thought was very perceptive of her. Mm-hmm. And she also suggested Flux. Especially Batman Flux, in her opinion.
Well, of course. Naturally.
But I had a few others. Potion Explosion. I have not had anybody play Potion Explosion and not find it fun.
Well, I mean, I think there's really something refreshing about the tactile feel of a game like Potion Explosion.
Yeah.
And it's not, I don't know if it's the whole mini thing. Like, I don't know if it's the mini craze and there's some, maybe some of the same
maybe
endorphin receptors are triggered or whatever when you have a game like Potion Explosion.
It feels like you're doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the mechanics also work well. Turns are short.
Macroscope, I felt like Macroscope had a very similar amount of tactile interaction.
Yeah, and it was
not good. And I didn't get the same feeling out of a game like that. So there is definitely something to Potion Explosion in a different kind of way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's even, you know, even the art is similar.
Yes. Yeah, they are.
But it wasn't there. So Potion Explosion is a really good choice.
Yeah.
I like a lot of the stuff that our friend Andy Jeremiah puts together. You know, the Brew Dice or Sports Ice Baseball. Or even Maze Racers in a kind of a different way.
Well, all of those, they have great interaction between the players.
Very easy to understand.
Super easy to explain. Any one of those games takes 2 minutes tops to explain, usually a lot less. So yeah, they're great. I would nominate Ancestry. Everyone we have invited to play that with us has had a blast going through it. And again, turns are fairly short.
Yeah, sushi go like almost in terms of tile drafting game.
Yeah.
In very much the same way. So,
speaking of which, a lot of party games fit this mold of fun. Mm-hmm. Sushi Go Party would be one of them. Anomia, one of our all time really favorites. Sushi Go Party is really on my list.
Go me.
And I'm going to suggest something that might be a little out there. I think a lot of tic-tac-toe variants fit this model of fun. You might not want to play them over and over again, but they're super fast. Everyone knows how to play. And and they're not too hard.
Mm-hmm.
I would say especially any kind of variant beyond your usual three in a row tic-tac-toe tends to be more fun.
Okay.
If you can put more players in there, or you can go in more directions, or whatever. So, feel free to disagree with me.
I don't have a strong opinion either way, I suppose, on the tic-tac-toe stuff. It doesn't seem particularly interesting to me. I think there's something neat about the ability to kind of pick it up and play it anywhere. Like, that's...
Sure.
That's appealing to me. That's actually why that contact game was so appealing to me in a theoretical sense, is because you could just be like,
I feel like playing this game.
We're waiting in line. You guys want to play a game? Yeah, sure, whatever. How do you play? You know, it's literally like,
that's
an easy thing to do.
Reasonable.
So I like that a lot.
One last suggestion.
Sure.
Another fairly recently published one, King Domino.
Yeah, King Domino's a fun game. I mean, it's really, I think King Domino takes the kind of the Carcassonne fun to the next level, right?
Yeah. Well, and again, several of these games I look at, I'm like, these are games where if you're, especially the ones where you're kind of building something, you can get to the end of the game and have, you know, feel like you have had fun and you're satisfied with what you built, even if you didn't win. Potion Explosion, King Domino,
Ancestry is a game where I don't care if I win or not. I mean, I want to, but...
Right, but you just have fun in the process of playing.
Right.
So I think that's a good sign with games like that.
Well, I'm sure that there are lots of games that our listeners are like screaming at their radios or iPods or
why
whatever.
Why didn't you list
this or that or the other thing or that game is boring or what are you talking about? Well, fortunately, we are very reachable.
You can get in contact with us.
There's lots of ways to do it. The best way probably is to comment on our Facebook page.
Facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA.
If you want to, you can also head over to the community where we can have kind of community chats. I know there's some changes going on with Facebook business pages and stuff. So if you want to go to the community, just go to thefamilygamers.com/community. It'll bring you right into our Facebook Family Gamers community, and that's a great way to talk to lots of other people about what games you think are fun.
Yep.
If you want to yell at us on Twitter, you can do that at Family Gamers AA.
Or if you feel like yelling at us on Instagram,
at Family Gamers AA. We actually have been doing a lot more well, I guess we've only done two so far, but we're going to continue doing them, these kind of live Facebook videos, mm-hmm. where if we're sitting down to play a game at the table, we'll just throw up a live video from my iPhone, and we'll try to catch a little bit of what's going on. That's what we did today with Sticky Chameleon. Yeah. If you like those, please let us know. I know we had a little bit of interaction on the video today. They go up with no warning because we never know when we're going to be playing games.
Yeah, no. Sorry.
So I can't tell you when they're scheduled, but you know, keep an eye out. If Family Gamers goes live, we're probably playing a game, and it's probably going to be kind of funny.
Yeah. A few quick things to shout out before we wrap this show. We reviewed Flip City last week.
We did.
And our friend Corey reviewed Robots Love Ice Cream. This week?
The card game.
The card game. Sorry. Robots Love Ice Cream.
Yep. That was just published earlier today. Yep. There's a survey on our website, and we would really, really, really like it if people checked out the survey and took it. It's at thefamilygamers.com/survey.
Yeah. If you're yelling at your phone, radio, whatever, at the podcast right now, go to the survey and tell us what you like, what you don't like, what you think we should change.
So we're gonna bribe you. We're giving away five games. Five games from our personal collection. Five people who have filled out the survey will get randomly drawn, and we will mail you a game free of charge to you.
Yep.
From our personal collection. So
please, and we hope you enjoy them.
Please take the survey and maybe win a game.
Yeah.
And of course, I would be remiss if I did not address the bet.
The bet.
The bet. Ryan Gutowski from One Board Family pinged me last week. After the Jaguars beat the Steelers, because the Steelers stink. Boo Steelers.
I'm staying out of this one.
Because yesterday, the Patriots and the Jaguars faced off in the AFC Championship game. So, obviously, before the game started, Ryan put a friendly bet on the line and said that whoever is whoever the fans are of the losing team has to come on to the show of the fans of the winning team, which means that Ryan and possibly also his wife will come on Family Gamers sometime soon, which will be awesome, because the Patriots won. Booyah.
Awesome comeback.
Oh, yeah. Every time. Fear the goat.
But I'm always going to find that funny because
our school's mascot was a goat. Yeah. Thank you, Tom Brady, for winning. And we look forward to having the One Board Family folks on the show. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we do. Please don't forget to subscribe to the Family Gamers podcast if you have not. Tell your friends about us and leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.
Yes, that would be totally awesome, and we would super appreciate it.
I think that's it. Until next week, play games with your kids.